CKUD Kulu 90.3 FM. Pinaswako si unaktumi Urban Indigenous Radio na lagunang naktasi. Utilaki bugu Maji 16 ulakpat. Nalatuin na kasi Soul Perspective Tusakso na lang miyok. Thank you for listening to Nipibut. Our theme song is by Angela Amakwalik. This episode was made by me, Nancy Angilap, Annie Pisuktit, Jennifer May, Tina Pisukti, Alexa Piliutak, and Power Bauer. Thanks to Concordia University, Southern Quebec Inuit Association, and CKUT 90.3 FM. Tune in this time next week to Urban Indigenous Radio. And we will be back March 16th. Stay tuned for Soul Perspectives. Coming up next.
And right now, I'm inviting you to tune in to CKUT 90.3 FM on your dial. Oh, Eric Donaldson says so. Sing, tune in.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening, wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Salamander, we took a flight at midnight, and now my mind can't help but wonder how come. spoon fed, pluralized eyes to find the beaches in the forest. When I'm looking off the edge, I preach my gut and can't help ignore it. I'm climbing up the walls, cause all the shit I hear is boring. All the shit I do is boring. All these record labels boring. I don't trust these record labels, I'm torn. All these people on the planet working 9 to 5 just to stay alive. The 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 9 to 5 just to stay alive. All the people on the planet working 9 to 5 just to stay alive. How come?
Yes, 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 we are back, we are back, we are back. It is Tuesday evening and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson and this evening's guest, I'm so, so happy to have her. She is a social entrepreneur, consultant, speaker, birth and perinatal worker. Her name is Ariane K. Mitterlus, and she's passionate about perinatal, sexual and reproductive health. She is the regional recruitment coordinator of the province of Quebec and sits on the steering council committee of the Respect Study, Research, Examination, Stories of Pregnancy and Childbearing in Canada Today at UBC's Birthplace Lab, on Breast Cancer Action, Quebec's board, and on the steering committee of L'Accord Féministe. Her background has led her to examine the importance we give the experience of marginalized women, particularly Black and racialized women in Quebec's healthcare system, specifically concerning sexual and reproductive healthcare and during the perinatal period. Ariane, thank you so much for being here with us this evening and talking to us. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. I'm doing okay, to be honest.
Yeah.
Am I doing great? No, I'm doing okay.
No, let's be honest.
I'm doing okay.
Let's be honest. That is a fair answer. I mean, I feel like because of the pandemic, people have become more aware of self and how they actually feel, and people are becoming more honest. So when you ask them, how are you? You know, people are going to be like, yeah, I ain't doing too good today, or I'm doing great today, or I'm doing better than I was yesterday. And I think it's important for us to be honest, because we're so, normally we're just like, oh yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay. Good. I'm good. And you? You're like, we just move on. And I did a post where I was telling people, like, don't ask how are you if you don't want a real answer. Like, if you don't want to hear how someone's doing, don't ask. You know, wish them a good day or something like that, but don't be asking them questions.
Yeah.
But as we are in a pandemic, I do want to ask you, like, how has life been since the pandemic started? How have you been coping? You have a family, you know, you're married, you have kids. How has that been for you guys?
It's been challenging. It's been challenging. It's been hard. Mm-hmm. It's been very hard. So to put in context, people in context, of course I had to get pregnant right at the beginning of the pandemic.
Did you have a COVID baby?
I have a COVID baby. So so it was really like everybody was saying at the beginning, oh, people are going to get pregnant. Oh, my God. And I was like, oh, not me, baby. And then, boom, I get pregnant. So that was quite funny. So I got pregnant with my fifth child during a pandemic. It was the hardest pregnancy physically.
Okay.
I was pretty nauseous like the three first months, of course, but they were so bad I couldn't do anything. I was almost bedridden.
Wow.
So that part was tough, but I think the pregnancy kept something positive in this whole mess of a pandemic.
Yeah.
Something to look forward to. just enjoying every moment, baby moving in the belly. I don't know, you know, we had to find little sources of joy and happiness. The kids were in the house. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Imagine like two teenagers, two in elementary school, me pregnant. My husband was still working.
Right.
So I was home with them trying to
keep your sanity.
Manage everything about school and homeschooling, well, learning, distance learning.
Mm-hmm.
And then in July 31st, 2020, my father died. Mm. My father passed in the middle of a pandemic in Haiti. I couldn't go.
Yeah.
The first time I, like, my cousin had called me that day to tell me, you know, he's sick. We're getting him to another hospital. We'll keep you posted.
Right.
And of course, he's somebody who's known in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
So my reflex was to scroll Facebook
right.
every like 5 seconds to see, is somebody going to say something? Am I going to learn something? I had to learn that he was dead on Facebook.
Wow.
So
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Well, it's kind of my fault, you know, because I was scrolling and my family was trying to see how they were going to tell me.
Right.
They called my mom so she could come home and tell me.
Right.
But by the time she came,
it was
I already
late.
Knew.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want me to, you know, be alone, whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I had to go through this during the pandemic and everything that comes with it. I mean,
yeah,
it hasn't been easy, but we're here. And we lost people. We lost people. We lost uncles. We lost good family friends. Yeah. And... yeah.
But you gained another soul. You brought a soul
into
the world. So there is some silver linings in the clouds.
Oh yeah, of course there is.
And how was giving birth during the pandemic for you? Because you said it was a difficult pregnancy in general, so I can't imagine.
It was a difficult pregnancy, like physically.
Okay.
Giving birth during the pandemic was, for me, was not that of a big deal.
Right.
Well, I'm talking about like the hospital setting.
Okay.
I could go on about like my, what I had wanted for this birth.
Right.
Because I have a history, but to make it short, I ended up...
We don't have to make it short. Let's get into it.
I had just like, my story is complicated. My birth experiences are complicated.
Yeah.
Because with my last, I had my fifth C-section. So
right.
I've had only C-section, but every time I wanted to try vaginal birth, and the way the system is wired, it's kind of complicated.
Right.
You have to fight to get those vaginal births after C-sections. So every time I fought, and that's a bit like after my third, that's why I became a doula, because I was like, no, people need to have the information. People need to understand what's going on. People need to know their bodies. So that's why I went into that line of work. But to come back to my, to the birth this time around, it ended up to be a C-section. We got back home like 2 days after.
Okay.
So we didn't really, and of course people can come see us. We were really in the middle of the pandemic.
Right.
So that was, it was, at the beginning, I didn't really feel anything about that. For me, it was like, well, it's important for us to be at home. I thought it was actually interesting to be just us, the family, you know? My husband did a wonderful job taking care of me and the kids. So all I had to do was baby me. And I think it made all the difference. He stayed home for the first 3 months. So I could recover at my own rhythm. He went back to work and then came back in June till October. So, I mean, this time around was really, really, really good. In terms of like healing, in terms of just like taking it in, bonding with baby, bonding with him, us, the kids, you know? So that was really interesting. I think it hit me a bit like a month, 2 months after baby was born. That, oh, we're alone. People can't come and see us. Like my mom hadn't, like, she had seen the baby, but she didn't take her in her arms at first. And I remember my mom, I think sometimes she doesn't remember, but I've been always super stressed about like the first bath.
The first
bath. You give the baby. So I think my first, my second, like my mom gave baths to my, I think almost all of them. And then for this one, I was like, what am I supposed to do now? So it was weird. You would think that, you know, your fifth child, but I was so, it's, they're so fragile. Like I can handle them and everything, but the bath, there's something about giving the bath that just stresses me out in the first like weeks.
What is it about the bath? Is it that you don't want them to slip and drown, or is it...
I don't know. I don't know. I would have to investigate and do some introspection and figure it out. But there's something about it. After I left to take my bath or my shower with baby, but you know, to bathe them the first week, oh no, there's something, very special about that.
That's interesting.
So it just hit me at one point, because the whole pregnancy I was home. I didn't really care about like being home because of the pandemic. Actually, it really felt good to me, because people might think I'm an extrovert. I'm actually an introvert. So it was just like, oh, I'm not forced to go outside.
You don't have to interact with anybody you don't want to.
It's
all good.
So for me, I thought it was great. And but yeah, it hit after, when I started going out with baby, like going for walks. And then I'm like, okay, but where am I going? Like, oh, we're out. We could go. Oh, no, we can't. So yeah, it hit a bit after that.
The veil came down.
Exactly.
Once you started to interact with the world. So you briefly mentioned that you're a doula, and we hadn't mentioned that before. Just for people who perhaps may not know what a doula is, could you just tell us what is a doula?
So a doula, how could you describe a doula? You can describe a doula as somebody who has knowledge about the perinatal period, who is a companion. Some people like to say birth sisters, a companion, somebody who's going to educate you, somebody who's going to be there to support you mentally, physically, somebody who's going to cater to you during your pregnancy. She's going to be there during the birth, if that's what's asked of the birthing person, and after the postpartum period. So the doula, you know, sometimes how I say it, and sorry, sometimes I lose my English words, but how I say it is, see her as a sister or a mother who has the knowledge, but who doesn't have that emotional connection to you.
Okay.
You know, who can step back from a situation and have like that macro look on the situation, right. Help you, guide you, you know? We're not there to tell you what to do. We're there to give you the information.
So you can make an
informed decisions.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're here.
And
you can, go ahead.
Why would you say it's a good thing to have a doula with you?
Why is it a good thing? Many answers to that one.
Okay.
So if you want to have the more tier, practical answers.
Okay. Let's go with that first.
You can have less C-sections, less recourse. Can we say that? Recours.
Okay.
Utilization of forceps, less epidurals.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the numbers at hand, sorry. A couple of things.
Okay.
The other important thing is in our communities, we know that Black, racialized, indigenous communities are subject to more obstetrical, gynecological violence.
Yeah.
It can reduce those violences because we tend, well, as a Black doula, I must say, as a Black doula, birth companion, we tend to advocate more.
Right.
When we see things, which is not the case for everybody that works in that field.
Right.
That's a subject that's really interesting because when you see the different perspectives around advocacy work,
yep.
What I've seen is that a lot of white folks,
mm-hmm.
What I've heard is that, well, you know, we want to work with the team. We want to work with the medical team. So we're not going to say anything right away. We might tell them later, or we might, the way we do our work is that we might inform our future clients and give them the tools so they can advocate for themselves.
Okay.
Which is good. You need to do, for me, what I think is we need to do both.
Right.
We need to help them advocate, give them the tools to advocate for themselves.
Yeah.
Explain to them what might happen, what they can do if anything happens.
Yeah.
But I think it is our, responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially as Black folks.
Yeah.
We have the responsibility to step in and speak up if we see something happening. And how I say it when I give, let's say, conferences is it is a privilege. It is a privilege for those birth workers who say, I don't say anything when I see something, or I look at my client or at the person I'm supporting.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to make them understand and try to make them speak up for themselves.
Right.
It's a privilege.
Right.
Because as a Black person, I cannot just stand and not say anything.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, because I can imagine that even if you have all the prep work, you know, and when it comes to actually giving birth to a people, everybody's situation is different. Absolutely. But I can imagine there's a lot of emotions. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of different things going on almost all the spiritual, emotional, physical levels. And even if you have the information, it doesn't necessarily mean you can make an informed decision right then and there, because sitting down and talking to someone when, you know, there's there's no contractions going on, when, you know, there's no crowning happening, there's no physical changes in your body, is different from when all of that stuff is happening right there and then, and you're like, you know, I need that epidural type of situation. And it's like, well, the time has passed for the epidural, you know? And so I can imagine that, like, just the mind is not in the right place to necessarily make all of those decisions by oneself. So it would be beneficial to have somebody who's actually gonna advocate. And like, when you say that, like, those folks, there's a privilege from not saying anything. Like, I just got like flashes of, like, you know, racist situations happening and white people being like, oh, well, I can't really talk about that because that's not my experience. It's like, well, you can say something, you know, if you see something, say something.
Yep, it's pretty much it. We try, you know, I think, well, I'm going to say I try to the best of my knowledge and my capacities to educate around that, especially around that, because there are too many incidences where people just have like traumatizing experience, birthing experiences. They live violence at the hands of the system.
Yeah.
And after that, they're stuck with it.
Mm. They're stuck with dealing with the trauma and the psychological.
Dealing with the trauma.
On top of having this baby, which may or may not be their first child, but they don't know how to, like, deal with this little human being. And then they're going through all of this other stuff.
Yeah. But actually, it's usually what happens is you deal with the baby.
Mm-hmm. And you forget about
self. Most of the time, and you forget. You don't forget because it surely affects everything afterwards.
Yeah. You put yourself aside.
You kind of put yourself aside, right?
Mm.
We've seen post-traumatic stress syndromes
related
years
to
and
birth.
Years after connected to the birth experience.
Wow. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time this evening, we are speaking to Ariane Metelus, who is a social entrepreneur, consultant, speaker, birth and perinatal worker. She also was a doula. And so we're talking about all that stuff that we don't normally talk about on this forum. We do have to take a quick break and get back to you. We'll play some music, ads, stuff like that. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Jealous of the rain that falls upon your skin. It's closer than my hands have been. I'm jealous of the rain. I'm jealous of the wind that ripples through your clothes. It's closer than your shadow. Oh, I'm jealous of the wind. 'Cause I wished you the best of all this world could give. And I told you when you left me, there's nothing to forgive. But I always thought you'd come back. Tell me all you found was heartbreak and misery. It's hard for me to say I'm jealous of the way you're happy without me. Jealous of the nights that I don't spend with you. wondering who you lay next to. Oh, I'm jealous of the night. I'm jealous of the love. Love that wasn't here. Gone for someone else to share. Oh, I'm jealous of the love.
If you have flu-like or COVID-19-like symptoms, such as fever, cough, loss of taste or smell, or if you have been in contact with someone infected with the virus, it's essential to get tested and to follow isolation instructions, even if you're vaccinated. Screening remains one of the best ways to limit outbreaks. To find out more, visit quebec.ca/test-COVID-19. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and I am speaking to Ariane K. Metelus. The bio is just like so well written and so like intricate, and I'm enjoying our conversation. You had mentioned before we went on a break, you had mentioned that as a doula, you're an advocate for the parent that's giving birth, and that as marginalized folks, Black, Indigenous, and POCs, there's a lot, those people who are giving birth experience a lot more violence, OBGYN violence. What does that mean? What does that mean, OBGYN violence? Like, could you put that into context for us, the listeners?
So it's a, when I say quite recent, I mean in the past 10-15 years, we've heard it more and more. Mm-hmm. Obstetrical violence, gynecological violence, OBGYN violence. It is, to say it, to put it in simple terms, I'll try.
Yeah.
It's really actually racism, coercion around any intervention, like okay. trying to force the person to accept an intervention.
Right. What could that look like, for example?
It can be comments. Like, well, listen, you're going to have to shut up now. You need to push. Or something like, well, we know what we're doing. It's for the good of your baby. Do you want your baby to die?
Wow. Gaslighting.
Gaslighting. It can be also ignoring one's suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Making jokes around somebody. I heard this story once. I was doing a training. I was participating in a training. This woman came. She was in labor. Mm-hmm. She was, comment dit en anglais, excision, excisée. Excision, you know, when the clitoris is cut.
Okay, she was
in different cultures. Sorry, right, I'm really blunt. And
No. That's perfect. I know exactly what it is. She was. I don't know what the word is. No, that's not it.
We'll look for it.
We'll find it. She had a genital mutilation.
Genital mutilation.
Right.
And you had this intern, mm-hmm. resident, I think, who came to do a checkup, a vaginal examination. And he just said, it was in French, ah, qu'est-ce que ça? Genre, ew, what's that?
Wow.
And it's, the lady's in for labor.
Yeah.
Like, really? So things like that. And you could say it's lack of knowledge, it's lack of bedside manners. Well, you have to have both.
Yeah.
To be able to do that job, right?
Yeah.
So that those are like the comments. Now more, if you want to talk about like physical violence, it can be forcing the person to stay in bed, forcing the person, like not listening to the person's need. I need to get up. I need to walk around. I want to eat. No, you can eat because it's X and Z, but X, Y, and Z. But the thing is, when you know your rights, you know you can eat while in labor.
Yeah. Okay.
It's actually good for you to eat while in labor. I'm not saying eat a big plate of spaghetti or something super heavy, but it's important for you to get the energy to drink, to eat. It's important.
Okay.
Now, if you have a condition that enables you to eat, I mean, okay, but in general terms, you can. So those are the things, not respecting the rights.
The rights of the patient. Person. Right.
Physical violence, like forced sterilization.
Okay.
So the person goes in for a C-section.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, well, you know what? While you're there, we're going to tie your tubes. What? A lot of people, it happened to a lot of people in Canada, in Quebec, where or they've been asked or they've been told the intervention was going to take place without them having the time to think about it, without them having the proper mental state to take that kind of decision,
right?
Which is not an urgent decision.
And like, so what, they just say, we're going to do this because we have made a decision that you shouldn't have children anymore? That's how it goes?
That's basically it.
Okay, we actually seen that you have something while giving birth, there was this, that complication, and so we had to do this. It's, so we're going to just tie your tubes.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can go for that. Enquête at Radio-Canada did a show on forced sterilization in Quebec.
Okay.
In Canada, sorry. Right. And it touched Quebec too. They also wrote a piece in La Presse, I think, but also on CBC. So the piece is also in English on CBC on forced sterilization. But yeah, it is mind-blowing to see what goes on. And it's not to scare people. I think we need to know what goes on.
Yeah, it's to provide more information.
It's to provide more information, and it's for people to be prepared, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, when we talk about obstetrical violence, we also talk about the organization of care, protocols, how everything is set up that people don't really get what they need, but it's all around protocols.
Yeah.
So never mind what you truly need. This is my protocol. I have to follow the protocol.
Right. This is my list of things that I need to get done.
Exactly.
And
my
I need to get
list.
Done in this way, and not be interfered with because you're a human being.
Exactly.
Who might have different needs.
So what I think what a lot of people and a lot of organizations now are trying to do is really to have patient-centered care.
Right.
You know, center everything around the person that's in front of us. And not, we're going to do this, this, and that. Oh, and it applies to a person. It's really, what is the need? How can we do things to meet those needs?
Right. Right. I remember I was speaking to a friend, he was telling me about him and his wife's experience. And one of the things is that his wife at the time wasn't a Canadian resident. And one of the situations was, that the doctor was telling them that you're going to have a C-section now because I'm going to be leaving soon. And the mother, the patient, knew that she was a doula as well, and she knew that she needed this much more time to be mm-hmm. at the correct amount of centimeters. I don't know if it was 10 or 12, whatever it is. That
it's 10.
There you go. I said it right the first time. She needed this just a little bit more time, maybe an hour or two, to get to 10 centimeters so she could push. And they were like, you either can get a C-section or you can go to another hospital. And at the end of it, it was like, well, we're not going to go to another hospital. So they ended up having a C-section. So that's a situation that you would consider to be a situation of OBGYN violence.
Definitely. It's coercion. I'm really sorry it happened to your friend, but I mean, they could have said no. I mean, it's such... But that's the thing. When you're in the situation and you have the doctor, the nurse, all the medical staff around you saying you need to do this, at one point, you just give up.
Yeah.
And at one point, or you give up, or they're the doctor. They're kind of God.
Yeah.
So I cannot go against... the medical team, they know what they're doing or they know what they're saying. So there's this fear too, mm-hmm. I think, around like the perception we have of the medical team and the science behind. But the first thing one of the things I say to the people I support is, you know your body better than anybody else.
Yeah.
You are the master of your body.
Mm-hmm.
You are the expert, I mean.
Yeah.
So, yes, we need medical support. But when it comes to birth, really, the reason we need hospital setting is if something goes wrong.
Right.
We can do without when everything is, you know, when you have normals, pregnancies, and even there, you have midwives, you have doulas, mm-hmm. you have, you know, you have people who can support you. And I think it's important to have that conversation too around how can we have better birth experiences, more positive experiences
mm-hmm.
In the hospital settings, but also outside the hospital setting.
Yeah.
Home births with midwives, birthing centers, those exist.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that we only have 4% in Quebec, 4% of the birthing population has access to birthing centers and midwifery care.
And why,
out of those 4%, mm-hmm. how many are racialized, marginalized, Black, Indigenous? How many?
Hmm.
Not much.
Imagine. And why is it that the access is so limited to these more, I would say, traditional?
Mm-hmm.
Traditional ways of giving birth as opposed to modernized hospitals?
So for the birthing centers and midwifery care, so first you have to understand, even if you want to give birth at home with a midwife, let's say, you mm-hmm. need to have a place in the birthing center. So to have access to the birthing center, you have to call. You have to put yourself on the waiting list most of the time.
Yeah.
You might be lucky and have a spot right on. Yeah. But most of the time, your name goes on the waiting list. Why is that? We don't have enough breeding centers. We don't have enough enough midwives. We don't have enough racialized and Black and Indigenous trained midwives.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bit more than in the past years, couple of years, just because they started recognizing midwives who would come from other countries. They started recognizing their practices too.
Okay.
So most of them have to do a little training. En français, on dit that point, just to...
So that they know the system here?
So that they know the system here, okay, and how things work here, but they don't have to start all
from
over.
From scratch, right.
The training, the four-year university training. So yeah, there. I mean, and because I think people don't consider enough that they have that option. Mm. So there's a lot. There's still a lot of education that needs to be made, but it's coming. I've seen a lot of people, especially in the Black communities, talking about midwifery care and how they want to birth with a midwife. So it's getting there, but there's a lot of education to be made.
And one of the other things that I had, and I feel hesitant to say this because I got it from someone else and it wasn't like I actually did the research, but what I understand as well is that there's a financial benefit to doing things like having C-sections and giving epidurals and having all of that extra work, quote unquote, done, as opposed to like waiting for the baby to be passed vaginally.
So you have the financial side of it.
Mm-hmm.
You also have the, how do you say that? Efficiency.
Right.
So the productivity.
Yeah.
The,
like a factory.
Let's go. Like a factory.
Yeah.
Kind of model.
So if you have like 10 people giving birth at the same time or experiencing contractions at the same time, you can get through all 10 of them within maybe 2 days, 3 days, if you have C-sections, as opposed to waiting until everybody's ready.
Yeah.
You know, because that, any, like some people might last only a few hours between the time they have their contractions until the baby's born. And some people, it can literally last days.
Yeah. So, you know, it's touchy because if you say that, it's like, no, we don't do that for money, and we're not here for money. We're here for the people, birthing people. Okay. But at the end of the day, you do get more money if you have a C-section. You do have more money if there's an epidural. You do have more money the longer they stay. Now they don't even want people to stay that much in the hospitals.
Right.
So it's, let's go. Okay, you've given birth. Okay, next. But yeah, there is. So let's take, for example, people who don't have their papers. They're like immigration status yet. Or if they want to give birth here, they'll have to pay.
Right.
So people are thinking, okay, but if I go with a midwife, it's going to be less expensive.
Okay.
When you go to the midwife, you still have to give the midwife something like $10,000.
Oh, wow.
Because they have to do a deposit in case there's a transfer to the hospital.
Gotcha.
So, and I'm saying 10,000. I heard that number a couple of times. Maybe it's a bit less. Maybe it's a bit more now. So now that person, okay, gets to the hospital. And oftentimes, that's another source of violence. Mm. So you're giving birth, you're in labor, you have to go to the hospital, let's say, to give birth, and then you have administration that's calling your room. Are you going to pay? How are you going to pay? Can you send your husband, your partner, can you send them downstairs to the registration so they can pay, so they can make a deposit? So you have all that stress that is not helping the process of laboring. So now you have to make a deposit. Oh, you want an epidural? That's another, I don't know how much.
Thousands of dollars.
Hundred of dollars.
Right.
Oh, we're going in for a C-section? You're going to have to pay for the C-section. All that.
So not only is there psychological violence, emotional violence, physical violence. Now we're talking about economical violence as well.
Exactly.
Like, it's just coming at you all over.
Exactly.
Wow.
And the more, I mean, the more you're at the center of oppression systems,
mm-hmm.
you know, when right. we talk about intersectionality.
Yes.
In regards to perinatal care.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. You just named them, some of them, you know. So you're economically, you're financially deprived, you're racialized yep. or Black. You don't have papers here.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes, people who don't have their status here, they don't want to say anything. Because oftentimes they're scared if they say something, it's going to affect
their status,
the immigration process. Mm. So many layers, so wow. many layers. And people need to be really educated around that and informed and supported.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I don't even want to go to a break. I just want us to keep going in and talking about it. But we do have to take a break. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Ariane Metelus, and we're talking about her experience and her work that she's observed and that she's doing in terms of she's a social entrepreneur. She's a consultant, a speaker, and she works in birth and perinatal care. And there's a lot to unpack. If you're just joining us, you're going to need to listen to the archives when the show is over at 8:31. But keep it locked for now. You are listening to Soul Perspectives on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Sufi woman, bring me room into life, fall asleep up on your bosom. Sufi woman, you're a lion, but you walk around so unassuming. You can shine your eyes, you don't put it on me. Put the liquor spell on me. What thing you do to me? You no go walk on me. You go see. You go, 999. You go, shake it. You go see that goddess in La Bruja, eh, La Bruja. She never die, she could die, my room, La Bruja, eh, La Bruja. She never die, she could die, my room, La Bruja, eh, La Bruja. She never die, she dies, as in Yalila, eh, Yalila. Sufi woman, bring me room till I fall asleep up on your bosom. Sufi woman, you're a lion, but you walk around so unassuming.
You should just give me that. Give me like all them awards. Give me that worldwide tour. Give me that brand new Accord. Give me like all that coin. Yeah. You can walk in my shoes, then you just stay for the view. Cause how I see is so cool. I don't see her or you. Irresistible, man huggable. Fluffy with the silly flows. Non negotiable, wild and like an animal. Out in Istanbul, I'm a bull. Staying quiet though. They can't wait for more, but you got it though. I don't control time, time might control me, but that's a rhyme for a different time and story. And I'll be just in time to sit and bask in all my glory. Everything I want is mine for what you got for me. You should just give me that. 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 Give me like all damn awards. Give me that worldwide tour.
Yes, we are back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and on the air with us this evening, we have Ariane Metelus. And we've been talking about so many things with regards to perinatal care, birth care, and the amount of violence that BIPOC women go through when dealing with the healthcare system here. And so Ariane has been a part of the steering committee of the RESPECT study. The RESPECT is an acronym for Research Examining Stories of Pregnancy and Childbearing in Canada Today. And I just wanted to ask, first of all, Ariane, thank you so much for like talking to us about this stuff, because I don't hear about it, you know. Like, if I didn't know you, I don't think I would have ever, you know, thought to talk to someone about this, especially as a man, mm-hmm. who quote unquote is less affected, not really, but supposedly less affected by the whole birthing process, and even the racism that you've told us about. But this project that you're working on, this study that you're working on, while we were talking while the break, and you said it's something that's really important and you're very passionate about it. Could you tell us a bit more? What is this study?
So the Respect Study is it's an online survey. It's open to anyone who has experienced a pregnancy or given birth in Canada in the last 10 years. With this study, we're hoping to hear from many people across the country with various identities, circumstances, backgrounds, and experiences. What we want with this is to evaluate and see what's going on. Like, how are you living those experiences? How is the system treating people when they're going in and to give birth?
Yeah.
Or when they're going for their, let's say, prenatal visits. Mm-hmm. We want to know. So what we want to do is have the good and the bad.
Right.
What's working, what's not working, and what can we do to make things better? Mm-hmm. And why I say it's an important study is because it's a pan-Canadian study.
Right.
So it's all across the country. It's rare that Quebec is included in those big studies.
Why is that?
Why is that? I can only speculate.
Go ahead.
Hypothetically.
We're allowed to have opinions.
I'm not sure. I think a part of the answer is oftentimes Quebec excludes itself from a lot of things concerning the rest of Canada.
Right.
Oftentimes too, it's the rest of Canada that doesn't include Quebec.
Okay.
I can take, for example, really just funny example. You know, when you want to enter some contests mm-hmm. On Instagram, let's say.
Right, right.
And then it's like, except for Quebec residents. Like, why?
Right.
Like, it's always it's always about the rest of Canada, but Quebec is excluded. So I couldn't tell you why exactly. One thing, I think we've talked about it before the show started. Let's say, for example, the task force that was put together in Canada for to examine what's going on around forced sterilizations.
Okay, yeah.
In Canada. Well, Quebec excluded itself. The government of Quebec excluded itself and didn't want to participate in that task force.
Right.
So that's an example. It is something of a huge importance, but for some reason, it's not on their priority. So they excluded themselves. Now that people are talking about it more, about forced sterilizations, maybe they're going to come to the table. Mm-hmm. Maybe. We don't know. But that's an example. For some reason, they just don't want to do it. Now, this one, it's BC who came to get someone here in Quebec and participants in Quebec. So,
right.
It's quite important, and we want people from all backgrounds to participate, because also that part is that a lot of times those research are for Caucasians.
Right.
We don't have enough
data
around BIPOC people.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough. So oftentimes what's going to happen, we're going to look for funding around perinatal care, around obstetrical violence concerning Black, Indigenous, racialized people. And it's going to be like, why? Well, it doesn't exist here. We're not in the States. Here is not like in the States. You know, we're going to get those kinds of responses. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to get some funding, right? Because we don't have the data.
Right.
So that data is very important. So if I may, the survey is closing at the end of December. The month. Right. So at the end of this month.
Yeah.
And we're
on
really
December
looking,
30th, you said? You had told me.
31st.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we're really looking for like Indigenous, Black, Asian, Latinx, and Middle Eastern participants. Like, it is, I can't stop saying it, but it's such an important research. We need people to participate because we need to make changes to our systems and to the care that's being offered to people.
Okay.
Especially here in Quebec.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yo, I forced sterilization. Like we did talk a bit about it on, I think we talk about it off the air, which is why I don't like to get into conversations off the air too much. Did we talk about it while we were on the air? Because there's a history of forced sterilization just in general,
yeah.
In general for all women. I don't know the dates, but I know that there was a period of time where women were getting hysterectomies. And I want to say this is in the late 1800s, early 1900s, that women who experienced quote unquote hysteria were, and please don't quote me on this. I'm just trying to do it from memory. Women who like had to go into like psychological psych homes, you know, like homes where people are being treated for mental health disorders, were then diagnosed with hysteria and then given a hysterectomy, saying something to the effect of basically it's because of her reproductive organs that she's going crazy, so we need to remove the reproductive organs. And now we're getting to a point where this type of situation is still happening, but not necessarily with the excuse of mental health, but for no reason.
For no reason. But there are reasons.
Right.
But so when you say for no reason,
well, no
I would
reason.
Say for no medical.
Right.
For no medical reason.
Medically supported reason, yeah.
Medically supported reason. But there is a reason.
Right.
There is a reason. What is that reason? That reason is
a form of population control with regards to the BIPOC.
Population control. I was looking for a word. But basically,
almost like
it's
a form of genocide.
Genocide. Voila. That's what I was looking for. So there is a reason. It was much, much more documented. It is much, much more documented in the States, right?
Right. Of course.
So I think it's in California. Don't quote me on that. I think it's in California. Well, it happens a bit everywhere.
Of course.
In the States, but there were cases in California in prisons.
Yes.
In prisons, women's prisons. It was happening a lot. More recently, there was this story about like ICE that was accused of sterilizing detainees. How you say that? Detenu? Sorry.
The detainees, yes.
Detainees, sorry. Who were crossing the border, right? So you have that most recent stories.
Yeah.
Here in Canada, what has been documented is what happened to Indigenous women. The forced sterilization of Indigenous women. You have in Nova Scotia, you have documentation on Black women being receiving that same treatment too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's happening everywhere. It's happening in Quebec too. It's been happening in Quebec too, mostly Indigenous people, but it's been happening to Black women too.
Yeah.
And we don't have those numbers. We don't have those information. Statistics.
Yeah.
So I was telling you, we did that show with Enquête, with Radio-Canada. After the show aired on September 23rd, my God, I received emails, phone calls of women telling me it happened to me too.
Right.
And it happened to me too, not in the 1800s, no, 2000.
Yeah.
As close as like 2018, 2019.
Wow.
It happened yesterday. I mean, literally.
Yeah.
So what's in their mind that they think they can do that? Why people are not saying and talking more about this, those issues?
Yeah.
Puis je vais le dire en français, pourquoi il n'y a pas un soulèvement? Pourquoi il n'y a pas une révolte?
Mm. Why isn't there a revolution? Why isn't there a revolution? An unveiling.
Because, I mean, and before, like when the story of George Floyd happened.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I made a post because I was seeing all those, I'll say it, allies.
Yeah.
Supposedly allies. All being so mad and, oh my God, this is outrageous. And how can this happen? And it's like, wait a minute. It's been happening here in Quebec too.
Yeah.
Where were you?
Yeah.
That's one.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, okay, now that you're outraged about the whole police brutality, racial profiling.
Yep. What are you going to do about it now?
What are you going to do about it? Okay. But I said this. I said, you know, the reason we came to know about it is because it was filmed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are we doing about women birthing people or not birthing people, just going into the hospital for interventions,
mm-hmm,
who are sterilized against their will, who are mistreated, who are living violence,
mm-hmm,
who cannot, and those are going on in hospital settings, in operation rooms where there are no cameras.
Right.
So when are we going to talk about that? I posted this in June 2020 or in July. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this woman. Oh, those are big accusations you're making here. Like you're giving no names and this. And I said, wait, it's going to come out.
Right.
Just wait.
Mm-hmm.
And then in September, the tragic story.
Was it September
story,
this year?
2020.
Okay, no, sorry.
Joyce Ishakwan died.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right? She filmed herself.
Yes, yes.
And then I was like, see? So that was the beginning. And then, of course, me, I knew of a story, the story that came out with Enquête, of that woman that I was supporting in her quest for justice or for answers because she had a tubal ligation.
What's that?
Without her consent. She had her tubes tied.
Okay.
Without her consent during a C-section.
Hmm.
So me, I knew, I didn't know it was going to come out, her story in particular.
Right.
Because it was in the plan in the beginning. But when Enquête, their journalist team, contacted me, they wanted to talk about racism in the healthcare system in general.
Right.
So they were like, we're contacting you. We would like to have you on the show. And I was telling them about what I was working on and the woman I was working with. And they were like, really? And they were really skeptic.
Skeptical, yeah.
Skeptical, sorry. Skeptic in the beginning. So they did their research. They called me back and they were like, you know what? I think we're going to do the show on forced sterilizations.
Yeah.
Because what we found is unbelievable. So I said, yes, see? Just
it's,
had
it's
to dig a little.
It's interesting that, you know, when it comes to especially Black women, especially Native women, especially women of color, and in that order, I would say, it has to be proven.
Yeah.
You know, your word is not good enough. What you say is not good enough. You have to prove it. It has to be caught on camera before anyone will take any action. It has to have been documented before we will believe you. You know, as you were saying that, you know, it takes me back to the 1990s when the LA riots happened because, man, why am I forgetting that brother's name? That brother that was beaten by like a dozen cops.
Rodney King,
yes. If someone hadn't taken out their camera at the time and filmed that, nothing would have come of it. I mean, the LA riots is a tragedy, and please don't get me wrong, anybody listening out there, I do not support that kind of way of protesting. I believe that it is our right as human beings to protest and to speak out against any kind of violence whatsoever. But you know, the importance of like having your camera available is life saving. You know, like you almost need to be recording wherever you go, whenever you're having interactions with certain people. You know, you have to make sure that you can actually prove what's been said. Doesn't matter who says it.
And it's sad.
That's crazy to me.
It's really sad.
We just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we're speaking to Ariane K. Metelus, who is giving us a wealth of information that I haven't heard before. There is a documentary that is out. What's the documentary called?
On m'a volé ma fertilité.
They stole my fertility, which is on
Radio Canada.
Okay, I'm gonna be finding a link and posting that everywhere. We do have to take another break. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
People they know they follow. People they know they copy. People all up in my grotto. They see me like a genie, try to keep me in a bottle. Petty, petty people keep them incommunicado. They tie you up in strings and play niggas like pizzicato. Lose sight of the picture, scripture, now they not so steady. Meanwhile, I'm like Curtis Mayfield getting people ready. See into the future, then cut through like a machete or cutlass. All these trappers leaving niggas gutless. You can't make moves for justice, you can't make no adjustments. Drowning in corruption, Charlie Addict. To convenience, now they got you caught up in calling freedom extremist. We're not in agreement, I won't lay down politely. I closed my mouth for years and they still tried to fight me. I sat down on the sidelines and they still tried to bite me. They buried my career and promoted my peers to spite me, but they can't tell me nothing, Charlie, they don't underwrite me. I've had a lot of money thrown at me, none of that shit excites me. It's just another kind of cage to get up in my psyche, to use me as an instrument to further push their puppet show. But I'm not inexperienced and it's not my first rodeo. I'm not so shallow, Charlie. I call it too precisely. Separate bone from marrow, so much so that they dislike me. Intuitive. Charlie, we be like fugitives. Until the universe responds to show them who the student is.
Woman cry.
Gives
us life.
Mother Mary and baby, the burden she carries all time.
Burden she carries.
Sinners all time.
So them I go make war before we pray. So them I go make war before we pray. What them I go make war before we pray.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. It is another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and I am here with Ariane K. Metalus. And she's just been giving us a wealth of information. Like, when we first were talking during the break before the show, we wanted to cover so many topics, and, like, I was telling her during this most recent break, we're going to have to bring you back on, Ariane, because this is going to have to be a two-part show, because there's a lot that needs to, be addressed and spoken of. So just a little bit of a recap. We've been speaking about the fact that Ariane was a doula, and she does a lot in terms of care, perinatal care and birth care, and she works on the steering committee of the RESPECT study, which is the research examining stories of pregnancy and childbearing in Canada today. And there is a website that is doing a survey and finding out about people who have given birth within the last 10 years, and of course focusing more on BIPOC individuals. If you want more information on that, there's quite a few studies that have been done, not only in Canada, but also in the States. There are documentaries. We found one called Belly of the Beast, which is California's dark history of forced sterilizations. Ariane is featured in a short documentary. No, not a short documentary, sorry. In a show called Enquête, on m'a violé ma fertilité. So we have stolen my fertility. They have stolen my fertility, sorry. And you can actually find that on YouTube. So I'm going to be posting that on our various pages, social media, etc. Ariane, Enquête.
Yes.
I was telling you to the break, I'm just so enraged by this information. It's like, it doesn't make sense in my brains why people do this thing. Why are people doing this? I've been rendered speechless, even though this is a medium in which we're supposed to speak. It's crazy to me that these things happen, and, you know, we're not in the dark ages.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I think, to understand what's going on today, mm-hmm. what is still going on today, I think we really need to explore and to learn about our history. And when I talk about our history, I talk about the history of obstetrics, the history of gynecology, because the modern gynecology and obstetrics that we have today, mm-hmm. when you go back, well, the father, and I hate to say that, but the father of modern gynecology, Dr. Sims, he actually practiced on enslaved women.
Yep.
Without
anesthetics.
Any kind of anesthetics. So we have to go back there and go up the timeline to understand where all those mistreatments and violence, all that violence comes from.
Yeah.
It just didn't appear yesterday.
Yeah.
It's been there all along, and it's being taught in different terms. They changed the wordings.
Yeah.
It's more subtle,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. But it's still, those things are still being taught today.
Yeah.
So the new generations of doctors and health professionals, I find they're more aware, and they really do their best. And I talk about the younger generation, and some, a lot in the oldest generations, but it's still there.
Yeah.
So we need to learn more about the history to understand better and to do better eventually.
But what do we do? What do we do the system obviously is not going to change overnight. What do we do until then?
I mean, shows like this one, yours, we talk about it. We talk about it until people believe, until people see. We talk, we inform, we educate. That's one thing. Mm-hmm. If it happened to you, to somebody you know, you talk, you get the discussion, you get the conversation going. There's something about speaking up. And even if it's speaking up to yourself, even if it's recognizing that something happened to you,
yeah,
even if it's writing it down, writing your story. Sorry about the noise. You know, because some people are not ready to talk about what happened to them.
Yeah. Just like any other kind of trauma. I mean, like,
exactly.
You have to go through a process before you're going to open up about it. Exactly. Especially open up in a very public way.
Yeah.
And you're opening up yourself to all kinds of like repercussions as well. Mm-hmm. You might get positive feedback from people who are like, I'm sorry you went through this. What can I do to support you? Da 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 da. And then you can get the other people who are going to gaslight you and be like, no, well, I've had children and I've never had that experience. And no, exactly. You must be lying. And that can't be true. Etc.
Exactly. Oof. So yeah, we need to talk about it, because what it does also is that people are isolated
mm-hmm.
around those stories.
Yes.
Or they think they're alone. Or they think they're crazy mm-hmm. for thinking that, oh, was that person like being violent towards me? Was that person, did that person really say what I think they said? Sorry if you hear some background noise. It's the baby. but yeah, so, and it creates, I mean, you have the trauma, but it does create all those violences, everything, all those trauma. They create mental health issues.
100%.
And so now we've talked about what it is, what it does, but what are we doing about it?
Yeah.
Where are those people go? Where can they turn to? Mm-hmm. Who can they turn to once they've gone through all this? And that's the hardest part, because we don't have a lot of structures in place mm-hmm. to support people who went through things like that. And that's where I'm at with my work now. You were saying, oh, you were a doula. Are you still a doula? What are you doing? Well, that's, you know, my work is going towards now that.
Yeah.
How can I support people who went through those traumatizing experiences?
Mm-hmm. Well, Ariane, tell us, I'm just like, I want to keep talking, but we only have an hour and a half. tell people where they can find you, if they want more information, as well as where they can get onto the Respect site and stuff like that.
So where they can find me, I'm not good with social media. I try to post as much as I can. I'm kind of social media shy. I know.
You say that, but I'm like, if I didn't see your social media, I wouldn't have contacted you to, you know, so you don't have, I don't think you have to be posting like every 2 seconds in order for the information that you're providing to be effective. You know, that's one way effective is good. You know, sometimes less is more.
Thank you. So I'll try to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
With that being said, so I'm on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So arianka.perinatal, or you can just look up for Ariane Metellis. You're going to find it. I'm on Facebook. I haven't really been active on my professional Facebook page. So it's Ariane K. Accompagnante. Yeah, those are the where I'm most active. Right now I've been taking a break because I'm taking care of my mental health, to say the truth right now. But I try to stay available to people who need to talk and who just need information. So yeah, you can find me there for the respect study. So what's interesting about the respect study is that it has been translated in many languages.
Right.
So you have Chinese, you have different indigenous languages, you have Arabic, Punjabi, you have Spanish, of course, English, French. So it's really interesting. So if you want to go to the main page, it's www.respcct.ca. So it's not like respect, it's really R-E-S-P-C-C-T.
Yes. Make a new song out of that.
Yeah. So yeah. And go watch the documentaries and go and inform yourself. Mm. Take care of yourself. And, you know, you were saying before, for us men, we're not that concerned, but entre guillemets.
In quotations, yeah.
I think you have a big role to play in everything that has been said today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you need to take care of yourselves too, as men. You need to support and be there for your partner. But you can do a lot too. You can get informed around those topics. You can advocate. You can amplify those voices and those stories and those disinformation.
Mm.
Don't stay passive because you're not the one carrying a child, because you're not the one feeding, breastfeeding, chest feeding the baby. Don't stay passive.
Right.
Go out there, share the information, share the studies, share the documentaries, share what you learn.
Yeah.
With the people around you.
Definitely. Well, thank you. Thank you for telling me that. I already plan to do all of that and as much as I can as possible. Ariane, thank you so much for taking the time out. You know, it can't be easy with a huge family and with everything that you all the responsibilities that you have right now. And I feel blessed to have been able to have this conversation with you. And I hope our listeners appreciate that as well. So the website to participate in the study is respectrespcct.ca, and that is going to be up until the 31st of December. It takes about 20 minutes to complete, and it's got a multitude of languages that it's available in a multitude of languages, so you don't have to worry about not being able to understand anything that's written if you belong to that group. Thank you again, Ariane, for being here, for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
We do have to bring you back and do a part two because, like I said, we didn't get into all of what we wanted to talk. We kind of outlined what we wanted to talk about, but we didn't get into all of it. But we'll be bringing you back on for sure.
It will be my pleasure.
Yes. If you're just tuning in, that's it for this evening. We have been Soul Perspectives. My name has been Kim Dominique Ferguson, and you are listening to CKUT on 90.3 FM. Just we're dancing, 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 dancing,
flipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Look how I'm living now. Police be tripping now. Yeah, this is America. Guns in my area. I got the strap. I gotta carry 'em. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go into this. Yeah, yeah, this is gorilla. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go get the bag. Yeah, yeah, or I'ma get the pad. Yeah, yeah, I'm so cold like, yeah. Yeah, I'm so dull like, yeah. We gon' blow like, yeah.
When you tell your girlfriend, get changed, you're dressed like a tramp. Change your password so I can see your messages. When are you going to change your mind, you stubborn idiot? Change your attitude when you talk to me. Change your friends. You better change your tone of voice. It's not up to her to change. It's up to you. Violence against women stops now. Talk about it. Do something about it. And call SOS Violence Conjugale. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
If you have flu-like or COVID-19-like symptoms, such as fever, cough, loss of taste or smell, or if you have been in contact with someone infected with the virus, it's essential to get tested and to follow isolation instructions, even if you're vaccinated. Screening remains one of the best ways to limit outbreaks. To find out more, visit quebec.ca/test-COVID-19. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal.
Puisque ça fait plus d'un an qu'on le mentionne, et que de toute façon vous le savez probablement déjà, on a décidé de ne pas vous le dire. Donc, on ne vous redira pas.